On Wednesday, August 28th, Fairfield Democratic First Selectman Mike Tetreault joined us at the top of the program in studio talking about his bid for another four-year term as Fairfield's chief executive. Also, Kevin Rennie, Hartford Current columnist, well-known blogger, former Republican state legislator, talked about what's going on with the current controversy surrounding the Connecticut Port Authority and someone who's now in the Secretary of the State's office.
Listening to Connecticut Today with Paul Pacelli on WICC 600.
Well, hi there. Yeah, that's us. It is WICC 600 at 7 past 2, 207 here on a Wednesday, middle of the week, Connecticut Today. Paul Pacelli here. Hope you and yours are all doing well. We'll be live with you right here on WICC 600 till 3:30 this afternoon. Then we'll break for Yankees baseball as the Yanks wrap up a series out of the Pacific Northwest against the Seattle Mariners. So now till then, we're 203-333-9422-333-WICC. But before we go to calls a little bit later, we're going to be delving back into the local politics of the area, Fairfield County, with folks running for election and re-election in the latter category, the re-election bid. We have Mike Tetreault, the Democratic first selectman of the town of Fairfield, going for his third four-year term. Mike, thanks for stopping by. We appreciate it.
Well, good afternoon. Thank you for having me here. I'm thrilled to be in.
So 8 years have been so much fun. You want to go four more. Is that how this works?
Absolutely. There's a lot more to be done, and Fairfield's just a great town.
What made you do it in the first? I know you were active in the town beforehand, but 8 years ago or 9 years ago when you ramped up to do this, why?
Well, my predecessor left. I've been on the Board of Finance.
That helps.
Yeah. And he had to be replaced. He left in midterm, mm-hmm. so he had to be replaced by another Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of raised my hand and said, I'll be happy to do it.
Yep.
And got selected to finish out his term and then ran for re-election at the same time. And got reelected back in 2011.
Is it always something you had thought about doing at a higher level? Was it something you said, you know what, I'd like to run this joint one day?
Thankfully, it was something that I never thought about
really?
Doing. It just circumstances turned in that I grew up in Fairfield, certainly.
Uh-huh.
Left for about 10 years, came back to work with my dad in real estate,
mm-hmm.
got involved in the planning and zoning and the Board of Finance, mm-hmm. and the RTM. And this kind of seemed a progression because I'd gotten so much background in the town, and real estate
yeah.
was a great background for understanding the neighborhoods, the people, and all the differences in our town.
We have to know everything. You're right. Like you said, the neighborhoods, the challenges each neighborhood has, the people, how good people think of the school systems, public utilities, all of that, right?
Yep. Well, no question. Fairfield, the number one thing we're selling is our school system.
Mm-hmm.
We have a great school system. It's award-winning in so many different areas, and it easily is, and any realtor will tell you this,
yeah.
it's the number one reason people move to Fairfield. So that's the golden egg, if you will, that we mm-hmm. want to make sure we protect, continue to invest in. We owe it to our students, but we also owe it to everybody in town to make sure, because this is the number one reason that keeps property values up. Because as you know, the more buyers interested in moving to Fairfield,
yeah.
And we've had, despite everything you may hear about Connecticut and declining population,
yeah.
Fairfield's had an increasing population for the last 5 years.
How much of that, Mike, and you say you're a lifer in the area, is it still... Is the percentage higher, lower, or just about the same from people who make a living in New York, out of state, or maybe on Long Island or in Manhattan, but choose to come back and live in Connecticut? Any idea of how that affects your town?
Oh, very definitely.
Yeah.
I mean, commuters definitely set the property values because
okay.
it's the prices and wages in New York that help people afford mm. houses. And if you look at town property values, the closer you get to the train station, there's definitely a premium you're
and
paying.
And especially if you have a parking space.
No question about it. But we also have the Fairfield Downtown Station was the second busiest station on the New Haven Line.
Yeah.
So it that's a big deal, and that means there's a lot of interest in commuters. Surprisingly, there are a lot of more folks that are not going in all 5 days a week. They're going in 2, 3, 4 days and doing a
flex
lot more
hours.
Work from home.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of virtual commuters.
Yeah, boy, that Fairfield Metro station, that helped immensely, didn't it? Oh, my. The parking lot's full every day.
Yeah, it took a big load off. Those folks were all on the wait list
yeah.
for our downtown station, so that made a big difference in terms of those people having a place to park and being able to get access to the train one way. And did tremendous impact on property values on the far side of town because they're now all closer to the train station, and New York City.
Yeah, I learned about that briefly. My wife at the time and I did look at some Fairfield County properties. We looked at a couple in Fairfield. This is years ago. I think one in Westport we looked at. And you're right, the closer you get to that train station, even though it could only be 2 or 3 miles, but you know, the allure of being able to just walk there a couple of blocks or things like that really does make a difference, doesn't it?
Well, that, and as you pointed out, having a capacity for parking spaces.
Yeah.
So getting that parking permit at the train station has been tremendous. We had at one point, I think, a 5, 6, 7 year wait.
Yeah.
Now it's down to a year to 2 years.
That's not bad.
So that's making it much more competitive with other towns along the Metro North line.
Why should the voters of Fairfield, Mike Tetreault, elect you again?
Simply put, we've got a solid track record. We came in with, in the last 5 years, we've put Fairfield in the best financial shape it's ever been in. We've had a 5-year tax increase of just under 2%, literally just at the cost of living. We've done that by not kicking the can down the road, meeting all of our long-term obligations. We've done that with, despite decreases in state aid, significant state aid to our town, and with GE moving out and losing the tax dollars that were associated with that.
Yeah.
We've continued to invest in our schools, and we've had a number of building projects going on that we have not delayed. We've fully invested in that, and we've fully invested in our schools' budgets to make sure that they can operate those buildings and operate with our teachers.
How difficult has all this been, Mike? Because, like you said, if you hold the line on taxes, and enough civil servants have told me, that makes everything you just talked about a little bit tougher.
Oh, no question. And fortunately, we've had a great group of department heads that have kind of helped us do that. If you look at the town, certainly police and fire are two of the big things we provide. But education is what it's all about on a town budget side. 65 cents out of every tax dollar goes to fund our education system. So that is, as I said earlier, that's the golden egg. That keeps people coming to Fairfield. But that's also where our investment has been, despite the fact that we lost two-thirds or more of our state aid from our ECS educational funding from the state. We've continued to make that investment. We did not pass that cost on to the taxpayers. We did not pass that cost on by cutting the ed budget.
There are a lot of people, Mike, who say that that ECS formula, something has to be done, but you hear about 7 or 8 different things to do it. People on both sides of the aisle say it's flawed. What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, it's definitely flawed.
Yeah.
I think the state has to step up and come up with a system that's fair, and then they have to use it. Because one of the things that's most frustrating when you talk to other first selectmen is everybody's complaining about their share of that.
Yeah.
But then everybody's saying, yeah, but it's nobody's following the formula. So you may be getting more or less based on where you are. And there's certainly towns around the state where populations are declining and student populations are declining.
Yeah, I can think of several towns around me that are thinking of closing schools.
Okay. In Fairfield, where our education population was growing for a whole number of years, last few years it's kind of flattened out a bit. But we got dramatically cut in state aid. Whereas over time, if our student population is going up, we should be getting increases in state aid as opposed to that.
Did you have to cut teaching positions or staffing positions at the Board of Ed?
We did not cut our Board of Ed budget based on the cuts in state aid. We found other creative ways to go back and replace that.
How's your town dealing with the municipal employees there and the cost for that, which, again, I know is another constant juggling act, dealing with unions and all that?
Yeah, our unions have been... frankly, very understanding of the economic issues. Since I came in office, we've been able to sit down and have good communication. There are certain things they want and certain protections they want, and we've worked hard to provide those. But they also have stepped up to the plate, and they are paying higher costs and higher share for their benefits than ever before. They are paying more for their pension and retiring medical than before. So they are stepping up the plate to helping fund those costs. And importantly, because this is part of the number one myth in municipal government around here, I want to state clearly that there no overtime that our employees work counts towards their pension.
You must have read that article about the state doing what? 200 and something million of overtime each year in the past 6 years.
The state has certain issues.
Yeah, I know.
I think to some degree it'd be great if the state looked at what not only Fairfield, but what other towns are doing.
On a local level, sure, yeah.
And look at it as an example or model of how to kind of help work with your unions, work with the employees. The employees are doing a great job, and I want to step up.
Well, they want to save their jobs. I mean, and they want, you know, Mike, I always thought that a town or local employee is different from oftentimes a state employee, you know, because people in the local towns, that you know, they see these people all the time. I mean, they're their neighbors.
No question. They've been in town a long time, and they have they really care about the town. And you saw that when Storm Sandy hit, when Storm Irene hit, when Nemo hit. The big snowstorm we had. So you see events like that. You look at what our employees do above and beyond what they required to do to help the town get through those events, and you realize how much they care about the town and what a difference that makes.
You wanted to talk, before we went on, about a couple of issues. I know one was a soil issue that the town is facing right now. You wanted to update that. Explain what that is and where that stands.
Certainly. We discovered back the first week in August that some contaminants were put in at one of our parks, School Manor. And as we're exploring that... And
what kind of contaminants? Where did they come from? Do we have any idea?
They came from a DPW workyard. Okay. It was material that never should have been put in a park or a ball field. But it was.
As filler.
It contained underneath kind of a sidewalk project, but it spills out on the side. So it contains some lead and some arsenic as part of that. And also some asbestos shingles. So we're very concerned about
that. How long ago was this put in, do you know?
Back in 2013,
2014. Wow. All right. Is there, I know, forgive me for interrupting, but is there a way the town will be compensated for this, for having to clean all this up?
Well, some of this material came from the Julian Yard, as we're calling it, where Julian Development was running our public works yard. So we're definitely evaluating what their involvement was and whether that should be included. But this material should have never been used in the park. When we looked at that and determined that that was inappropriate and where it came from, then we said, hold it. Was this used anywhere else in town? And we went back and we identified relatively quickly 20 other sites that we needed to explore and test and potentially remediate. And that's right we're in the process of doing, because a number of these were school sites. School system got involved and closed a number of their fields. So for the last 2 weeks, we've had our parks, many of our parks and number of school fields closed until we can evaluate this fully. We've gotten the 20 sites tested. We're waiting for the results to come back. We got the first 8 sites back, 5 of which came back clean. So they're fine. And we've opened up those
parks
and fields. We're waiting for 12 more to come back. 3 came back with some partial contaminants. We've fenced off those areas. Fortunately, they were in limited locations. So we're able to fence those off and keep people away from that.
So now a contractor has to be hired to come in, or is the town
doing this? We've already hired a licensed environmental professional to come in, come up with a remediation plan, and help us remediate that. Fortunately, the exceedances, the according to the, we're working with the Department of Health, Department of Energy and Environmental Protection, and our environmental consultant, and they're calling these exceedances marginal. So they're not way over, but they are over the residential limit. All right. So while this might be appropriate for commercial or industrial use, it's not for a park.
It's not for kids and pets to be playing out in.
So, you know, we've talked to the Department of Health. They haven't indicated any significant health hazard at the moment, but we do need to remediate. So we're going out and doing that. So we're going to move as fast as possible, get these ball fields back online, and make sure our residents know they're safe when they use them.
One other issue, I had both sides in for about 30 minutes each about a month and a half ago regarding a little bit of a controversy you have going with affordable housing in the town, and the fact that part of the expansion of this, Mike, would take over a rather large area of open space. Where does that stand?
That's currently going through our conservation board for approval. And then if it's approved, we'll move on to planning and zoning. That certainly is a challenge. And as much as we need to do more for affordable housing in our town, there you want to place affordable housing where mass transit is to make it easier for
That was the point that was brought up,
And this site, I think from my personal standpoint, I think is being overdeveloped. If the development were about half this size, it might be more appropriate. When it's this size, it's creating tall buildings way too close to other property lines. It's going to potentially cause parking problems, potentially cause some drainage problems. And it's just an overbuilt site. Plus, the distance people have to walk along roads And unfortunately, those roads don't necessarily have sidewalks. You mentioned campaigning earlier. I was out knocking on doors in that neighborhood.
Yeah.
And you're walking on a road.
On a road.
With no sidewalks.
You're going
So it's just, the location is not the best.
Mm-hmm.
So as much as we need to do more, I think we also, it would have been good if we could have, and I say we, it's the Fairfield Housing Authority is doing this.
Mm-hmm.
And they are not a town agency.
Yeah.
It's the name sometimes in folks will imply it's part of the town, but they are separate from the town. They don't get any tax dollars from the town. So at some point we need to look at a better plan for how we do this, and we don't just pick any size, any lot that comes up, and especially when it's in this kind of residential neighborhood away from mass transit.
Mm-hmm.
It would be better if it were closer to, and when you look for the guidelines of affordable housing, mass transit is one of the big ones you put there.
Because you're dealing with people who may not want or have the accessibility for transportation.
Correct. If they're going to walk to mass transit to get to work, then you want to make sure that's within reasonable walking distance and a safe walking distance. So the concerns that come up, there's not a safe way to walk to mass transit from this location.
Sure. Finally, Mike, wrapping up here, what would be your statement to any voter listening now in Fairfield who is wondering whether or not they should vote for you for another 4 years? What would you tell them?
Very simply, that despite the challenges in the economy, state government cutbacks, we've kept taxes lower than they've been in 25 years. We've invested in our schools. We've invested in our seniors. We've got a plan for economic development. That financial foundation is important for moving forward because that gives us the flexibility to continue to do what's important to Fairfield and fund our strategic plan that should be coming up shortly.
Why set up a business in Fairfield?
There isn't a better place for demographics and location than Fairfield. We've got, especially in the tri-state area, we've got a lower tax base than New York and New Jersey. We've got a lower cost of living than New York and New Jersey. We've got a growing population. We've got a higher quality of life. And it's showing every year when people continue to buy houses in Fairfield and our population continues to grow.
Democrat Mike Tetro, two-term incumbent Fairfield first selectman, running for term number three as we continue to have our elected officials and challengers on in the area. Mike, thanks for stopping by. We know you're busy. We appreciate it. Thanks.
My pleasure, Paul. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thanks.
You're listening to Connecticut Today with Paul Pacelli on WICC 600.
Yeah, and we are back at you. Yankee baseball coming up bottom of the hour right here on WICC 600. We will continue with our program of the best of Connecticut Today on WICC600.com if you want to chime in on that as well. 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. A column written a couple of days ago caught my eye and want to bring back a guy I've talked to oftentimes to peel the onion layers back of Connecticut politics, Kevin Rennie, former Republican state legislator, currently a practicing attorney. You read his columns in the Hartford Courant and also read his daily Ructions, R-U-C-T-I-O-N-S, daily Ructions blog. Kevin, Paul here in Bridgeport. How are you, my friend?
I'm very well, thank you. I'm flattered to be a lead-in for the New York Yankees.
Well, you know what? And yeah, I mean, and so am I, and that's where the comparisons to any salaries are going to end. You wrote a pretty compelling column and a good summary of a story, I think, Kevin, that's kind of, I don't know, bubbling kind of under the fold, as we used to say in the newspaper days. But what's being uncovered regarding the Connecticut Port Authority? A lot of folks, number one, wouldn't even think that the state has a port authority. What is the stated mission of this outfit, Kevin?
Well, the Port Authority is an agency created by the government, state government, that oversees and administers three deep ports in Connecticut, Bridgeport, New Haven, and New London. And New London has been getting the most attention because there's a $93 million project to improve the New London port in order for it to be a staging area for offshore wind projects, which has been a emphasized as important for Connecticut's future by Governor Lamont.
Okay, now,
and so the Port Authority has created legislators and the governor, I believe, appoint the members. The chairman was an active, ambitious Democrat named Scott Bates, who was the Deputy Secretary of State. And he approved some expenditures that raised some serious concerns, controversies, and required him to resign.
Yeah. We should say, Kevin, these expenditures were not, he bought an extra box of paper clips here.
No,
had to do with nepotism. Go ahead.
Well, he approved the purchase of, I think, 6 photos for $3,000 taken by another board member who had been, I think, who also had been a chairman of the Port Authority. Her daughter took and sold those photographs. And there was also a sort of very strange decorating contract that went to, not the highest bidder at all. And in fact, someone who bid twice as much as the lowest bidder, I think. Mm-hmm. And that was, a friend of his wife's. And there may be one more. There was a public relations communications contract that went to a firm or a company that didn't appear to have an office, and that Scott Bates had some connection with at some point.
So we have Scott Bates here, and I think I've actually interviewed him in the past on some of his foreign policy credentials, be they as they may. But you have a guy here who apparently, and I don't want to play judge, jury, and executioner here, Kevin, but you take a look at this, and there's 3 separate instances while running this Port Authority before he becomes Deputy Secretary of State, 3 instances here that kind of make you scratch your forehead a little.
Yes. Yes. In fact, I'm not sure that they all happened before he became Deputy Secretary of the State.
Oh, okay.
You can do both jobs. You can be the executive director who has been suspended, should note, for saying unpleasant things to a member of the public. so you can be the chairman. These are not paying jobs. They're not full-time jobs, mm-hmm. I should say. These are more citizen members of the board. But people like to get on these boards because they have a tremendous amount of autonomy. They're subject to some state laws, but not all. And they, as you can see, they can do favors for their friends.
And the problem here, Kevin, as you point out and other people have pointed out, now he is the Deputy Secretary of State.
Right.
After, as you point out, a rather tad bit of an ostentatious ceremony to be sworn in. And now there is a call or people saying, well, wait a minute, should Denise Merrill, his boss, the Secretary of the State, should he be relieved of his duties? Should he have to step aside? Should he wait for a formal investigation? And I know that has troubled you and many other members of the General Assembly and state government.
Because we are told, and so we have some sense of this ourselves, that the Secretary of the State's office is sort of the headquarters for protecting our democracy. And a series of secretaries of the state have made themselves out to be very important figures in the fundamental tasks of making sure that people vote, are allowed to vote, and that every vote is counted.
Mm-hmm.
And as we know, there can be a lot of mischief in the administration of elections, and it seems to me Denise Merrill ought to be examining exactly if this is the right person to be in charge of an agency or that part of an agency that is so crucial to the essentially the lifeblood of Connecticut's democracy.
Here
in the Constitution.
Is she sort of going la, la, la to all of this? Or,
yes, she has kind of poo-pooed it.
Yeah.
Yes. Scott Bates has said, other than saying he resigned from the Port Authority, he hasn't really said anything.
Mm-hmm.
I hope he's considering his position and understands that he may not be the one to help lead the administration of an election in what is absolutely the critical year of 2020. Anybody would tell you that.
You know, it's interesting.
Whatever their views may be,
yeah,
they will tell you that 2020 is a critical year.
And as you say, you know, just to wind up here, Kevin, it maybe only be $3,000 here, you know, whatever, you know, helping out, albeit improperly, friends, graft, whatever. But this is the kind of thing, Kevin, that you and I see over and over and over again in this state, met with, you know, if not tone deafness, you know, radio silence here. And it's frustrating.
A shrug is not an uncommon reaction in Connecticut. And, but, you know, first of all, the Port Authority is a small agency. It's only now, with an emphasis on our ports, that they're getting more attention. But they've been operating quietly. So they don't have that many contracts to give out.
Yeah.
And if you're doing it over the decoration in an office and the design of an office, well, you it's only natural to wonder what else has been going on.
As we spend a couple of more minutes with the blogger and columnist Kevin Rennie, former GOP state legislator. He blogs at dailyructions.com, also writes for the Hartford Current. Kevin, as kind of a spinoff on this, you also on your blog, I noticed, put up an interesting piece, tagging a piece that was in the Day of New London about how there was apparently some intervention by the governor's office and the state police regarding a critic. Again, one of these stories that's kind of getting drowned out by everything. But I want you to talk about that, because that's one I read and why I just went, huh? What's going on with that?
Well, that's a really that is a very disturbing story. One of the critics of the Port Authority, he's been there was a time, I guess, we would have called him a gadfly, but he's, he seems to be well-informed and pays close attention to this. And he sent a letter or an email concerning an upcoming hearing that the Legislature's Transportation Committee was having about the Port Authority. And he made some harsh comments, and I think said something about his blood would be on Governor Lamont's hands, which I'm not sure what that was about.
Mm-hmm.
But when he arrived on a week ago Tuesday at the legislative office building, he was met by state troopers, and they took him aside in a room and kept him there for quite a while. Apparently they were going to take him to the local headquarters, troop headquarters.
Yeah.
That didn't happen, but it was certainly intimidating. And eventually the story was from the police that they were worried about his safety. They had gotten a complaint from the governor's office about him.
Yeah.
And I think if anyone had been worried about him doing something, if he was a threat, I hope they wouldn't have waited until he got to the legislative office building.
Yeah, that's my thought. Yeah, yeah.
They would have known where to find him, and mm-hmm. they could have headed that off. And the other thing is, if they thought that his safety was somehow in danger, that they would have done the same thing. They wouldn't have waited until the hearing on Tuesday, and because he had sent out the he'd sent the email to a list of people, I think several days before, and so it just seemed like an overreaction by the governor's office that was then picked up by the state police, and that is worrying.
So do we know?
Sometimes law enforcement does need to say,
yeah,
to officials, particularly in the executive branch, look, you got to calm down. We have plenty of experience with this, and this is not what you're saying.
So do we know, Kevin, whether or not, or did the Day ever find out whether or not, you know, somebody in the governor's office, was this kind of an order to the state police, or did the state PD?
I don't think we know that.
Okay.
I don't think we know that. But so, certainly it was brought to the attention of the state police,
yeah,
by Paul Mounds in the governor's office.
Okay. All right. Well, again, optics, my friend. It's all optics. What does it look like?
Yeah. Well, what it looked like was they were constructing the details of the story after it had come to the public's attention. So
mm-hmm.
what what they did at the legislative office building.
All right. You know what, Kevin? Never a dull moment in the beautiful Constitution State. Never,
well,
ever.
Even in August,
you
can get a rest.
Yeah, we can stop talking about tolls and all that for at least a month. Boy, there's been radio silence on that toll thing, Kevin. Huh? We went from 80 gantries to zero pretty quickly.
Yeah, well, he was staking his governorship on it, but now seems not to be.
No.
Maybe he will. Resume in the fall. I don't know. I had my own ideas on what they could do, but yeah. I'm just a writer who once served in the legislature.
Maybe the crisp air of wherever he is up in the North Country of Maine, there around the water, wherever. Maybe that'll reinvigorate our fearless leader. You never know.
Maybe he got some wisdom from his meeting with Governor Cuomo.
Yes, boy, I tell you, I heard that, and I went, there you go. Well, you know, that could be the 2024 White House ticket. You never know. You never know, Kevin. You just never
know.
Well,
we probably know about that, but you're right.
All right, Kevin Rennie, Hartford Current columnist, former Republican state legislator, current attorney, and blogger at dailyructions.com. Kevin, thanks, my friend. We'll talk down the line.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thanks. Bye-bye. There you go. Well, so a little bit of controversy surrounding the governor's office. Did somebody in the governor's office, maybe because the governor was, occupied, preoccupied with other stuff, did somebody in Governor O'Neill's office, Governor O'Neill, did somebody in Governor Lamont's office, jeez. Actually, I was watching something on YouTube the other night that referred to our long-gone, wonderful, the accidental governor, Bill O'Neill, the barkeeper from East Hampton. And I just heard somebody say something on YouTube, and I said, man, Bill O'Neill, God bless him. Where is he these days? Well, we know where he is, but wonder how he's doing from on high. Hopefully he's bartending on high, pouring somebody two fingers of cutty on the ice and just talking politics. Eh? But our esteemed governor, Ned Lamont, recuperating and refreshing. I guess. Is he still on vacation? I guess he is. Supposedly up in the North Country of Maine, where he's got a little bungalow up there, North Haven Island, I think it's called, up there. Not North Haven here. Not in that tidy little Republican hamlet just north of New Haven and south of Wallingford, my end of the woods. But apparently here there's some controversy over whether or not somebody in the governor's office told the state police folks to go to this guy and kind of have a little meeting with him. Maybe, instructing him that there might be better things for him to do than be concerned with all of this. Then this whole thing with the Port Authority, I mean, it may not be, as Kevin Rennie said, this is not a grandiose position, but the bottom line is there was nepotism, apparently, allegedly. There were some sweetheart contracts, apparently, allegedly. And now the person that apparently, allegedly, see, I'm covering all my bases here. The person that did this is now a deputy secretary of the state. Well, should that person step aside or at least step aside for a while and have this whole thing, investigated deeply? Because as Kevin said, that... The worst thing here is where we just look at the stuff and go, whatever. You get, as he said, the shoulder shrug. The shrug of the shoulders, the knitted eyebrows, and you say, well, this is Connecticut. This is where we are right now.